This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
I'm Chris from Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material, a part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other astonishingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You've dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Haley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry, if we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 342 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where... Okay, just get the sophomore jokes out of the way, okay? This is a serious discussion about dramatic television, people. We're not Riff Tracks, we're not Funny or Die satire team. We're a technologically advanced squadron of hackneyed podcasters hell-bent on global mediocrity. Downgrade in progress. I'm Jay.
I'm Keir.
And I'm Haley. And this week we get a glimpse of what Chris Chibnall could do when left unattended by BBC executives in the early 2010s. As he pins the fourth episode of Torchwood's freshman season, Cyberwoman. Remember when we discussed how the first series was a bit of a try-anything experimentation? Yeah, that.
All right. So, you know, as we mentioned in the intro, we're a positive enjoyment of everything in the Whovian spectrum.
Yep, we're gonna... so my mama always told me if I wasn't going to say anything nice, not to say anything at all. So it's been a great podcast, guys.
Haley, be back next week for episode 343. All right. We will go through the steps on this one because some people are experiencing Torchwood for the first time. It has been proven. I now officially know that we've got listeners that have been chiming in with us to let us know that they are experiencing Torchwood for the first time. And so they will experience this with us. Haley has given her overall impression of this episode, is that it is one that to be quickly forgotten.
Yeah, I wish I could.
Jay, just the high altitude assessment of Cyberwoman.
Well, I remember this as being one of the extreme low points of series one, and the memory is not as bad as I thought it was.
Okay, not as bad.
My memory is not as bad as that.
Gotcha. You must have been forgetting some good parts of the episode.
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So for those who are drifting through the story for the first time, you know, you're looking at a situation where we find out that Yondu has been keeping a secret somehow from one of the most technologically advanced underground organizations on the planet, but he is able to hide an entire cyber conversion kit in the basement with a semi-living human being for I don't know how long. Do they ever really address how long it's been since the last stand against the cyber fleet?
No.
Okay. Well, didn't they lose two Torchwoods since that happened?
Right. Yeah. They've been enough.
So he's been moving her, I guess.
Okay, and we know how awful the whole ordeal was because as he was pulling her through plastic sheeting, the lighting was very red, and they all moved in painful slow motion. So that meant it was bad.
Right.
And if you needed proof that it was bad, they showed you that scene three times
Just... You know what I really appreciate about this episode is the subtlety.
Yes, that's an excellent point. They really want to make sure that you work for your pleasure. Okay, normally at this time we would talk about things like, all right, individual performances and actors that really kind of stepped up and gave something new and nuanced or interesting or interpretive to their roles. I liked Reese. Reese was great as a, you know, slightly inebriated boyfriend at the wharf. That was good.
What was his total screen time?
About 7 or 8 seconds. I liked the pizza delivery girl before she was done, all Hannibalized and had her head cut open. That was good.
Yeah.
You know, ribbing Yanto for the pizza delivery before she got there. But I have questions. I do have questions. So question
number... Yeah, I thought they were told not to bring pizza down there anymore or have it delivered.
Yeah, they got a good scolding for that. But, you know, hunger wins out, typically. Okay. So, question one. The choice to give Yanto his first kind of get-to-know-the-team episode, which this obviously really was. I mean, it all kind of pivots around him and getting to know the least-known character a little better. I don't know how well that was executed because all it set up was an opportunity for Yanto to yell at Jack for not asking about his personal life, and then Jack ignoring any concern over his personal life, all hell breaks loose, and then after screaming it out for the last 15 minutes with guns pointed at everyone, then Yanto goes back to cleaning up trash and being quiet and sullen, and Jack goes back to just staring at everyone like vultures from up on a perch in the hub.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on hostile workplaces, but if somebody ever points a gun at my head and tells me that I have to shoot my girlfriend or I'm going to get killed, might not show up the next day. Just, yeah, kind of weird.
Well, there is that
might take a long weekend.
Yeah,
you know what? I'm just going to take a personal day, sort some things out.
I got at least 1.5 days of PTO banked in. Cash those in. Okay. And while we're on the Jack and Yanto conversation, the kiss of life to bring Yanto back that is rather round peg, square hole, kind of slammed into place, as is the Owen and Gwen snog in the morgue slab.
So yeah.
All of that just kind of, here, viewers, in case you're not paying attention to the rest of the storyline, snogging, and just throw it out there. I don't quite understand.
I think we've mentioned this before, but pretty much all of early season one could have done with a revision on the scripts. Like, take another pass, take some of the concepts you have in here, and just, like, punch it up, fine-tune things a little bit. Like... Just like I said, this episode has no subtlety at all. Just boom, Jack's doing mouth to mouth with tongue. Boom, for no reason, Owen and Gwen are snogging.
Uh huh. Well, here's the thing: if you look over the credits, your script editor is Brian Minchin. I mean, this is Brian Minchin. this is Stephen Moffat's right hand man, and I don't.
I think they didn't have time. Like, they were in such a hurry to do this show and to get the first season on the screen that they, like, no matter how talented the people are, they didn't have time to fine-tune anything in the early episodes.
I'm going to start doing a little bit of an analysis of what the turnaround time was on some of these production blocks, because I'm curious now to know, you know, what kind of, you know, fast assessment, you know, fast assembly they were really doing. This episode in particular shows some shortcuts being taken in the production process. You know, every time the cyber conversion tools were being employed, it was always exactly the same shot. Even when they were shut down, it was just the same shot slowed down to a halt with a red filter over it. I mean, it was just a lot of reuse of scenes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't even like a new shot of the cyber conversion. It's the same one that we saw from
precisely from when Takanazi gets Tanizaki, sorry, gets converted or failed conversion at the beginning. I will say that was kind of cool.
Yeah, but see? I mean it was it was actually the same shot from Age of Steel.
Was it really?
It was the exact same CGI shot.
Oh, like, they
couldn't be bothered to make a new CGI.
Well, that just saved them a fat stack.
Which they could have used on a script revision, but didn't.
Yeah, gosh. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm trying, folks. I'm trying real hard. I think my primary concern, or my obstacle in this episode, and I remember this back on first watch, back, I don't know when I was watching Torchwood at live broadcast, I think, or close to live broadcast, was Gareth David Lloyd's performance in particular. Mm-hmm. Because it seemed almost, and knowing where he's come, you know, and how far the character developed and things I've seen him in other than Torchwood and what he's capable of, this felt like regional theater. It was hard to watch at times. But I don't know if that's him or if that's something that I have to kind of point a finger at the fact that he was given really, really hackneyed lines to a certain degree, or whether it was James Strong as the director for not kind of saying, you know what, you need to pull this one back. Not every line you deliver has to be done with a pulled frown and, you know, and forced tears. You know, it just, something just wasn't there.
It's almost like he was, you know, he had to be emotionless. Like, he was pretty much emotionless through the first three episodes. Mm. It's like, oh, wait, now I have to act. Okay, let me try acting again. And the first shot.
I will slap my chest when I say me, and I will point my finger when I say you. But then, all right, aside from attacking anyone in particular, pterodactyl attacks? No, that's just a simple MacGuffin. We won't go to the MacGuffin. I will say, I did find some positives. Some are legitimate positives. Some are, I was just kind of reaching for positives. Before I do that, Haley, is there a single solitary thing about any aspect, performance, execution, or technical on this episode that you can say, not bad?
The music was fun.
Okay, that crosses off the first thing I had on my positives list. If you do nothing else but just listen to the score, this was actually one of the most diverse theme and exploration of incidental music that Murray Gold got a chance to do. Because he started off with like this kind of rocking, ooh, crap's going down, things are tough, and it's 2011, and or I'm sorry, 2006. It was 2006, and look at us, we're full of angst, and guitars and things, and then he gets to do all the technical mumbo-jumbo stuff around the middle of the episode where they're trying to figure out the torch was in, you know, the hub's in lockdown. And then he gets to do a lot of the dramatic string and heartfelt stuff towards the end of the thing when you're dealing with how many times does Yanto have to watch his girlfriend die? The answer is 3. So that's a positive. Jay, have you got another one?
It wasn't a two-parter.
There you're thinking. Yeah. All right.
It was nice that they finally addressed the whole, like, Yanto's just there to fetch coffee thing, because, like, through the first couple episodes, it's like, why is this guy even here? Like, it's just, this is annoying. And for him to have that moment to actually call it out, whether it fit the story or not, was kind of nice to, it's like, okay, finally, somebody addressed it. It quickly got undone, but whatever.
Yeah, true. So Murray Gold had a field day with it. It was not a story that had to last any longer than the allotted, you know, 40 some odd minutes. Using the Cybermen was actually at least a nice nod to Doctor Who proper.
Okay, see, I actually kind of take some issue with that. Just so, like I said, I've been going through this with trying to view it as somebody that hasn't seen Doctor Who, and this is confusing. Maybe more confusing to me because I know Cybermen and I'm trying to get the connection there, and it just doesn't seem to line up rightly. For somebody that has never seen Doctor Who and they come into this, it's just, okay, you know, weird robot girl. Got it. We can move forward. But for me, it's like there's a disconnect, and they never properly say, holy crap. They should have shown like a clip of the cyber invasion.
Yeah.
This is what's going on. Like, this is where things were progressing to. This is what she was turning into, but didn't quite make it. You know, because the explanation that they give is lacking.
That's so, an interesting point. I mean, if they're going to reuse...
I was going to say, of course, like, the cyber conversion process has a phase where you're in a metal bikini with your face exposed.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You start with the naughty bits. Eliminate them, because they're clearly, they lead to emotions. You can't have emotions. From there, then you work on sense of identity, so the face has to go. And so then
belly buttons
button.
Have no emotions.
No, belly, but they're, yeah, that's...
In
that's
fact,
just an access point.
Highlight them. You put a circle around them and be like, look, this is what we're aiming for. No emotion.
That's a gravitational center. So you need to mark that point, because when you're putting them on a teeter-totter, you got to know where to balance them. So that's important. I will say, at least from a continuity or a story progression standpoint, I will credit this episode at the fact that the team is starting to notice that Jack should have died. So yeah. At least you got that. I mean, Owen is now going, wait a second.
It's like, you're supposed to be dead.
It's like the dead parrot episode. You know, you put 4 million volts through it, you tit.
It gave Jack a little bit of a chance to be sassy when he's like, you're supposed to be dead. He's like, yeah, I'm feeling stubborn today.
But if that's going to be the case, if you're going to toy around with Jack's, his immortality and regenerative capabilities, why does he have a scab on his lip for the entire final sequence? He pushed a bullet out of his skull three episodes prior.
Even Jack's healing can't keep up with his hickeys.
Oh, okay.
If it's not a mortal wound, it doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. So, boy, if you ever get him into a rose bush, he's screwed. Okay. Then that's the kind of the last real positive that I had was, at least, you know, you got Jack and the team starting to question. Because I am not going to call Owen and Gwen's relationship a positive that they're starting to recognize one another as human beings, because I don't want to know Owen as a human being.
Yeah, no, that was frustrating. But
well, also, like, we were told that that's happening, like, very explicitly. We haven't seen that develop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely in a episode full of them, that was a dark spot that just, yeah, no.
Yeah. So we won't bother going around to say whether this may be, in our consideration, a worthy addition to the season. This is just something that kind of separates the wheat from the chaff. If you can make it through this one and continue to say, you know what, after seeing the first 4 episodes of Torchwood, I'm hooked on this show and I really want to keep watching, you are a fan.
I have one more thing I think I need to say.
Okay.
I'm really curious as to whose idea it was to play basketball to see who had to buy drinks, because clearly none of them have ever seen or played the game before in their life.
No.
Well, that basket was not set at a regulation height. Like, not even close. And you had a pterodactyl swooping in at random.
But also, usually you're not allowed to, like, be up on a balcony while playing either.
Yeah.
But this is Torchwood. They don't play by the rules.
But, like, even if you're going to play some weird screwy version, I'm wondering who thought, like, yeah, for sure I'm going to win, because none of them look like they have any basketball skills.
No. No, they don't. And we know that Jack is clearly not a sports fan, because in all of his years, he's never seen a rugby match either, which in Wales is probably a crime.
And also, Jack would have other reasons to watch the match besides the match.
Precisely. Precisely. So there's something inherently wrong with the system here. But there you have it. So Cyberwoman is there. It was an episode that was filmed, and people watched it. Actually, you know, a decent viewership, possibly because they just wanted to see what the heck this program was doing. But, you know, close to 1.5 million viewers on its original airing. And this was, remember, being back in 2006, so we're not counting this as, you know, day plus, anything of that sort. This is straight to broadcast, live viewers. So it's not nothing, but it is not up to their standards. I mean, as far as you compare that to previous episode airing numbers, even on Ghost Machine, which we were kind of, well, you know, we were okay with it, I suppose. That was closer to 1.75, close to 2 million viewers. So just over the course of the week that passes on BBC Wales, they lost 250,000 viewers. So something's got to give. You get a little bit of that back, I think, in my opinion, next week. Or next broadcasted episode. But yeah, there's some work to be done, for sure. For sure.
A little bit, yeah. All right. Oh, wait. I just thought of one more positive thing about this episode.
Ooh, do tell.
We're done with it. We don't have to talk about it again.
Awesome. Let's move on to some news.
Sounds good.
Okay, credit where credit is due. One of our listeners tipped us off to something to add to the conversation that we were having last week about the rumor that the Mirror had put forth about there being a Mary Shelley historical piece being considered for, or actually at this point, maybe even being written or starting principal production for Series 12. If that's the case, then it may in some way have some origins in a Big Finish story. I'm surprised I didn't remember this, but there's a whole like black window period of my Big Finish that had to do with, well, having a kid, things like that. So funny how that gets in the way of things. There was a story from 2011 from the main range called The Silver Turk. It was an Eighth Doctor adventure where he was traveling at a time, I believe at that time, without a companion, and happened to pick up a young Mary Shelley. He actually picked her up maybe 30 main range episodes prior, back in like 2009, but they were toying around with some different storylines, doing some different things with different Doctor stories. So by 2011, they came back around again, and they did a few with her as a traveling companion. Mary Shelley, by canon, if you take Big Finish as canon, has traveled in the TARDIS. So that's freaking cool. But Silver Turk was a Cyberman story that apparently was her inspiration in that storyline to write about Frankenstein and Dr. Frankenstein's monster. So maybe this is another case of something like Jubilee becoming Dalek, maybe one of the Virgin novelizations, or the Wilderness Years novels being turned into a storyline, because they just kind of proved themselves to be capable scripts. But yeah, I mean, since the 2 weeks now that we've been sitting on this news story, no one has come forward to corroborate anything the Mirror has said. So that's, I don't know, usually by now, when the Mirror puts those things out there and it does the rounds through all the various PR, somebody else comes forward and says, yeah, well, you know, we've cast so-and-so, or yeah, here's some, you know, when we were shooting at this location, we were doing these period costumes, which would lend itself to, but nothing so far. So I'm still kind of wondering if this one's just twisting in the wind as a rumor.
Yeah, very possibly, but we also haven't gotten a denial either. So who knows?
Is it really on them to do that though? I mean,
no, but it happens. So, yeah, I mean, it has happened.
I mean, I was going to say, even if it's not true, like maybe they want to see what the response is to this idea for a story.
Yeah, you were saying something about that last week, about, you know, they could use this as a just kind of a test the temperature of the water and see if there's any interest in, oh yeah, no, we had that idea all along, but we're actually doing it for season 13.
Free market testing.
Yeah, precisely. Well, the other piece we've got is actually something that you could take with some certainty, and that happens to be Christopher Eccleston's increasingly busy convention schedule. As we're recording and producing this, you've got the London Film and Comic Con, which is coming around in a matter of just days, that he is on the docket there to speak about. and everyone's really, really pleased to see him back home. There's only weeks to go before he shows up at Rose City Comic Con in Portland, and then he's added something new to his September schedule. So what's going on there?
Well, apparently it's just taken about, I don't know, like 10, 12 years for him to be like, oh, wait, I did do this thing, and people like the thing, so maybe it's not so bad if I, you know, acknowledge it.
Schedule's getting a little thicker. So he's picked up a major, major con here in North America, at least, in Edmonton. So when he's going to the Edmonton Expo, that's kind of large. That's probably, as far as, and the guys from RFS can probably attest to this, that is the largest attended convention that happens in the Canadian market. I mean, I've attended a couple, but I personally have never seen what Edmonton Expo turns out to be for total attendance, but I know it's tens of thousands. So, and I know the RFS guys are going to be all over this. So that's coming up on the weekend of September 20th through the 22nd. And then just a couple of weeks after that, his North American tour, I guess you can call it, will, at least as far as I know, this is the last thing he has on his schedule here stateside, will be at New York Comic Con, just a tiny little thing, at the Javits Center in October. I'll be down there for that, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to squeeze into any panels. I'm going to try. But yeah, I'm so fascinated to see that he's come so far around on the, I really have no genuine interest in conventions or those attendance, to, all right, maybe I'll do some of the ones where it's only photo ops, to, oh yeah, no, sure, I'll do full panels. And now I'll do half a dozen of them in a 2-month period. What do we
think? Here, put a gun fishing sign up on the table. That's how you get to go to the panel.
Is that it? Actually, my job is to be on the floor. So I don't even get to be locked at a table. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll just put the camera down for a little.
Panels have floors.
Panels have floors. So what do we think is the impetus behind all this? As far as, I mean, you think it's just the wallet?
Yeah, I'm wondering if he doesn't have some kind of project coming up that hasn't been officially announced yet. And this is kind of like he's going to use the convention circuit to start to publicize it. That makes a lot more sense to me than he, you know, needs some cash.
Okay. All right. Haley, where do you sit on that call?
I mean, I lean towards the need some cash thing with maybe the caveat of, you know, he did one to see what it was like and didn't hate the experience. So now he's willing to do more.
True. True.
Yeah.
So be nice to Chris if you see him at a panel, or he might not come back.
I think he was just recently, or maybe just in the near future, also be coming to Dallas for a big con, too.
I think that's true.
Yeah, I thought I saw something coming up for that. Yeah, so, just a lot going on there. My hope out of this is maybe if he's starting to bring down some of those barriers against the, you know, the kind of the looking back fondly upon his, you know, his time on Doctor Who, that maybe he'd be willing in years time, 2 years time, maybe, to accept a call from Jason and Nick at Big Finish and do some audio. I would love to hear the Ninth Doctor's voice again.
Yeah.
Oh man, can you imagine if the Ninth and 13th got to cross paths so that they could compare their Northerner take on everything?
I mean, we would just need them to give us the script along with whatever performance they put out there.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I'd love to see I'd love to see 9 and 12 and just see who can out-sass the other one.
Just the two of them just arguing over, you know, which train to take.
You wouldn't understand a word they would say, but it would be fascinating.
It really would. It'd just be a lot of eyebrow raising and hand gesticulations, and it'd be perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the news that we've got for this week. You know, hopefully stuff will start coming out soon, because, you know.
I think so. I think we're at a bit of a disadvantage because San Diego didn't have much Doctor Who presence, and SDCC has been dominating the news cycle so much for a week that when we get into, you know, once that the dust settles there, I think we'll be okay.
All right. Well, so what are we doing next week?
You remember when we played that Rassilon game and it was just, you know, a random noun generator, and you had to come up with the powers and capabilities of an object, of an artifact of Rassilon at random. Yep. I wanted to see, and I think this was based on some conversation I was having with listeners at a convention years ago, and I remember writing a note somewhere on my phone that I came across not too long ago, and I'm like, what the hell was this thing talking about? And it finally, the penny dropped, and I'm like, oh, right. So the whole idea is the blank of the Daleks. So, you know, we've had Remembrance of the Daleks, Genesis of the Daleks, Revenge of the Daleks, the hairdryer of the Daleks, the on and on and on. And I thought, what if you took the whole premise of the blank of Rassilon that we played, and instead of talking about an object of some sort of degree of, you know, omnipotence or otherworldly power, I want to come up with a strategy that the Daleks are using for universal domination. So, you know, if you come up with something and it's the popcorn popper of the Daleks, or, you know, the afternoon business or financial meeting of the Daleks or whatever, you've got to try to determine what their plan is based on that title.
All right.
Come on. You got to be game for it.
This could be very interesting.
It could. What I'll probably do is I'm not going to use a true, like, completely random noun generator like I did for the game of Rassilon. This would be something where, you know, I come up with a bunch and I'll just throw them into a hat. So they'll be cultivated a little bit. But as to which ones actually come about, that'll be random. You cool with it?
Oh, yeah. No, this sounds, it could be fun.
All right. Got it. So. I'll work on the pencil sharpener of the Daleks.
All right. Well, this has been episode 342 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, not a robot, also not a girl.
Oh, nice pull. And this is Gear saying, I've had a couple of beers with Daphne, we're off for a curry. So could your video wife swap?
And this is Haley saying, so you want to get together later and kill all humans?
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.